And once again, good morning, brothers and sisters. And once again, welcome back, everybody. Every year, on the second Sunday of Lent, we hear this same gospel reading, this mysterious, majestic story, and I hope you already know that it is called the Transfiguration of Jesus. This magnificent story in which Jesus takes Peter and James and John, and only Peter and James and John, and he goes up to the top of this high mountain, and his face shines like the sun, and his clothes are spectacularly white. And it's the very first time, the only time in his life, in which Jesus appears as he actually is. This is not to be counted as one of the miracles of Jesus. This is Jesus just being himself for once. In fact, my favorite explanation of the Transfiguration says that it's not one of Jesus' miracles, but rather the temporary cessation of a miracle, the real miracle being that Jesus kept his true identity hidden for all of his life and appeared to be just like anybody else. And he takes Peter and James and John and nobody else. Where's the other nine? They're down at the bottom of the mountain. And by the way, you're going to find out later, they weren't very happy that they got left behind. When they come down the top of the mountain, they're all jealous. Well, why didn't you take me? What's wrong with me? Why did he only take Peter and James and John? That's what we're going to talk about here today. Answer is because Peter and James and John needed it in a way that nobody else did. Peter and James and John, they've come to be known as the pillars of the church. And by that, it means that Jesus relied on these three. These three bore the weight of spreading the gospel message more than all the others did. It's no exaggeration to say that because of Peter and James and John, billions and billions of people for thousands and thousands of years would come to faith in Jesus Christ. They needed this. God knew what he was doing, because in just a few days, Jesus is going to climb up another mountain, namely the mountain of Calvary. And there, these same eyes, which now behold him radiant in glory, are going to see him drenched in blood. And these ears, which hear the voice of the Father saying, "This is my beloved Son, listen to him," they're going to hear the angry mob chanting, "Crucify him, crucify him." It's going to shock them to the core. Who knows? Who knows? If not for the inspiration of what happened to them on this mountain of the Transfiguration, their faith might not have survived past Good Friday. They got what they needed. Now, there's lots of things we could talk about when we talk about Transfiguration, but I just want to talk about this. What Jesus does for Peter, James, and John, Jesus does for you. The pattern of events in this gospel is the same pattern of events that you see in your life, and that's three. Number one, there's a trial. Number two, there's a message. Number three, there's a mission. Trial, message, mission. That's how God acts in your life. Some people, they might hear this and they might say, "Oh, where's my mountaintop experience? How come I can't have the inspiration that I need for what?" You're getting exactly what you need. Do you believe that? God not only has providence for you in your life, God has perfect providence for you in your life. You are getting, and I mean minute by minute, in the most minute details, exactly what you need. Let's pause for a moment and just think about that. Do you believe that? I hope you know the answer. The answer needs to be yes, because what I'm touching on here is the virtue of hope. It was given to you in baptism. It was strengthened in confirmation. You've got it. It just needs to be exercised to get stronger. The virtue of hope. What's hope? Hope is not vague optimism about the future, that everything's just going to turn out for the best, when you know quite well that it's not. Hope, rather, is the knowledge that God is going to give you exactly what you need. Maybe not exactly what you want. Okay? And once knew a man, he says, "Father, if I got everything I want, I would have ended up in jail." Okay? Not everything you want, but he can give you everything you need. If you really believe that, you'd never worry about anything. And the pattern in which he gives these things to you involves both consolations and trials. You need them both. And that's what you see here. Trial, message, mission. First comes the trial. What was the trial? What was the hardship for Peter, James, and John? The hardship was they had to climb this mountain before they got their vision. That was the hardship. I don't know if any of you have been to Israel. I hope if you haven't been that you get the chance to go. If you ever get a chance to go to the Holy Land, the Gospels come alive because you can go to Israel and you can see the mountain where this happened. And it rises up out of the plains of Megiddo majestically. It's great big mountains, great big plains. And there's a great big mountain that rises up right out of the plains. And right up on top of the mountain, there's a little church. And all the tourists go up there and they all take their motor coach, air conditioned, up and back. But it's a 2,000-foot climb. Now, I've been to Israel 3 times. One time, I had to climb it myself. And it's a grunt. It's a tough climb. It's almost straight up on a tough, rocky path. But I wanted to see what it was like for Peter and James and John. And it was the trial that they needed to prep them for what they would receive. Now, does God send trials into your life? Yes. Yes, he does. He sends them into your life. You need them. If God didn't send trials into your life, you wouldn't get to heaven. Okay? So remember that next time you're going through a trial. We progress by means of trial. If it weren't for trial, we would never become who God meant us to be. But God does 5 things for you in your trials. 5 things God does for you in the trials that he sends into your life. He directs you, inspects you, corrects you, protects you, and perfects you. Let's talk about each one of those. Directs, inspects, corrects, protects, and perfects. First thing God does with you when he sends a trial into your life, he directs you. Some people are so cozy, snug as bugs in rugs, that if God didn't light a fire under their behind, they'd never get up and move. Why does God send trials into your life? Sometimes it's to get you moving, okay? He directs you. Secondly, he inspects you. They say that people are like tea bags. You want to find out what's in them? Put them in hot water. So God inspects you and he lets you know what you're made out of too. It's very important knowledge. And thirdly, he corrects you. Tell me if this doesn't ring true. But you never learn the way you learn after you fail, right? It's a lesson you never forget. There are some lessons we're never going to learn unless we're burned. God corrects us by means of trial. But would you believe he also, number 4, protects us by means of trial? You probably heard this said before, you know, hardship comes into your life. Don't worry, it's a blessing in disguise. I'm sure you've heard that before. How many of the hardships in your life are a blessing in disguise? Spoiler alert, all of them are. Every last one. And in addition to that, who knows, there are many, many very bad things God protects us from in a way that we never would have been able to do if it hadn't been for the trials. He protects us. But the last thing he does is he perfects us. You're a work in progress. Are you ready for heaven right now? Probably not. Probably not. Heaven is a place of perfect love. Think that describes you today? Probably not. So God's perfecting you. And he sends trials into your life because trials build character. And God is far more interested in your character than he is in your comfort. I don't know, name me one great quality that you have in your soul that didn't come as a consequence of a trial. But that's what happens here with the apostles. They couldn't have gotten this vision if they hadn't first gone through this hardship. Only then can God give them the message. This is my beloved son. Listen to him. He had to get them to the right place first. It's been said that God whispers to us in life's pleasures, speaks to us in life's ordinary events, and shouts to us in our sufferings. Sufferings are God's loudspeaker. Had it not been for the difficulty of the climb, they wouldn't have been prepped to receive the message. So that's the second thing. Here's the third, mission. They received this message for a reason. What was the reason in which the apostles received this message? They were supposed to go strengthen everybody else. All the others whose faith wasn't quite as strong as theirs, they saw who Jesus really was, so that on Good Friday, they would help the others maintain their faith. You ever stop to consider this? Every blessing you've ever received in your life has been for two reasons. Number 1, for your own sanctification. You got it because you needed it. But number 2, You got that blessing because somebody else needed it. Probably the greatest motive for growing spiritually is when you realize the people you love are counting on you. If you knew that your sufferings, whatever you're going through right now, was going to teach you just exactly what you needed to learn so that someday you could be perfect to assist someone you love, you'd go through that suffering a dozen times. But that's exactly what's happening. See, here's Peter. He doesn't understand that. He says, "Hey, Lord, let's just hang out up here on top of the mountain, build three booths." In every blessing in your life, you're just like Peter. You want to just stay there. Let's just park it right here forever. But you can't rest on the mountaintop. Mountaintops are great for inspiration. But fruit is grown in the valleys. You have to go down that mountain. Just like Peter and James and John did. You know this threefold path that God leads us all down? Hardship, message, mission. Sometimes I think of the image of a farmer plowing a field. Imagine this. Farmer wants to plow a field, wants to grow corn, let's just say. What does he have to do? Before he can plant the seed, first thing he has to do is break the ground. If that ground could speak, it would probably cry out in pain. But only then can it receive what it was meant to receive. And only then can it bear great fruit. Same thing in our lives, right? And it's hard. Don't be surprised when it's hard. If it was easy, we'd all be saints, wouldn't we? We'd all be saints. St. Paul tells us, second reading, that it's hard. He says, look, bear your share of hardship for the sake of the gospel. Abraham, first reading, he knows it was hard. I love the story of Abraham. God's going to do great things through Abraham. He's going to build entire faith. He's our father in faith. He's going to build the whole faith on Abraham. But first, Abraham has to pay a price. God says to Abraham, get up and go to a land I will show you. And this he says to Abraham when he's 75 years old. Just as he's ready to, you know, snuggle in a little bit and take it easy. God says, nope, Abraham, not done with you. Get up and go. Where am I going, God? I'll show you when you get there. And he says, well, there's only one thing I've ever wanted in my life, and that's that I've wanted a son with my beloved wife, Sarah. God says, I got it covered, Abraham, don't worry. You know how long God made Abraham wait for that child to be born? 25 years. God tried Abraham hard, didn't he? That's why it was such a blessing. Same thing with the apostles. Think it was easy for them? And these 12 had to get up and leave everything they'd ever known before and go off to distant lands and proclaim the gospel to people who'd never heard it before. And for this, they were 11 out of 12 of them were going to die martyrs' deaths. Don't be surprised when it's hard. Be surprised if it's not hard. But you want to know what else? Rejoice when it's hard. Because the hardest roads lead to the most spectacular destinations, don't they? I mean, why doesn't everybody climb the most beautiful mountain? The view from up there is great, isn't it? Why doesn't everybody climb it? Because the road is so hard. That's why people don't climb it. Easy roads lead to boring places. Easy roads lead to Walmart. Easy roads lead to Office Depot. If you're riding on a hard road right now, give thanks to God. Hard roads lead to spectacular destinations. And I've never known anyone in my life, ever, who's heard the voice of God, persevered in his service, and lived to regret it, not once. And that's why I'm so fond of saying, if today you hear his voice, harden not your hearts. Amen.